So you're running out of closet space. The good news? You don't need to stop shopping. You just need to start selling with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted resource for authenticated luxury resale. Whether it's that mini bag that can't even fit your phone, or those boots you never fully broke in, The RealReal handles everything from photography and copywriting to shipping and pricing. So you can just sit back, get paid, and make room for things that actually feel like you. And with 10,000 plus new arrivals every single day from top designers like Prada, Celine, Louis Vuitton, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail, you're bound to find something perfectly on brand to fill that extra closet space with. Plus, right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Make room for what feels like you. Go to TheRealReal.com to start selling and get your extra $100 to keep shopping at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
Moncrief on News Talk.
There are the Olympics and the Paralympics, but there's also the Deaflympics, a multi-sport international event that takes place every 4 years and is recognised by the International Olympic Committee. And in recent times, a range of new technologies are being employed to improve the experience for both competitors and spectators. Paul Carter is a broadcaster and presenter of BBC Techsplore and was at the Deaflympics in Tokyo in November. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. Thanks for having me on.
So how big is the Deaflympics?
It's growing every year. I mean, this year there were, 80 different nations competing across 20 different sports. So, you know, it's a major sporting event. It's still not quite at the level or scale of the Paralympics, but it's actually been going longer than the Paralympics, interestingly enough.
Right. Okay. Yes. That must wrangle with them a bit if they're not getting as much. It's not as high profile. So, was it this year or right? The last one, the ones just gone in November, that they introduced a lot of these new technologies, were they actually testing them at the Games?
It's a bit of both. So some of them were being used for the first time. Some of them were just sort of being tried out and tested, see what works, see what doesn't work. Some of them were kind of from big established companies. Some of them were from small little startups that were just sort of, you know, trying to test the water and see how this kind of stuff takes off. And it's kind of a real great testing ground because it's not very often you get that many people in one place who all have a very similar impairment or disability where you can actually, you know, try all this stuff and get feedback on it.
Yeah. Now, and as I understand it, they didn't use onomatopoeia, but they're using the technology as a form of onomatopoeia. Explain that.
Yeah. So that was being used at a couple of the different sports, and that was more for the spectators. So the people in the arenas could actually, you know, get that sense of atmosphere, but also a bit of a sense of what was happening in the sport. So, I mean, a couple that where we saw this playing were in table tennis and in badminton. So on the big screens in the arena, there'd be lots of kind of words popping up. I mean, obviously in Japanese because we were in Tokyo, but, you know, it would be things like thwack in the table tennis. So, you know, really kind of big sounds and all of those kind of things to really sort of try and get that excitement to the people that were watching that weren't able to hear the sounds.
Yeah, so that sounds like you're probably too young to remember the original Batman TV series where they would
indeed,
actually have
pal,
that.
Yeah.
Yes. Was there a time lapse between that in the sense that, you know, when the words appeared, was it almost simultaneous with whatever happened
It was pretty simultaneous, and there was, depending on the different types of sounds that were being played. For example, there was one event we went to, it was judo, where they were using a lot of haptic feedback for spectators. And for the sounds that were coming directly from the sport, that was using microphones and sensors that were kind of around the mat and around the floor. But for the crowd noises, they actually had a person that was interpreting sort of those sounds and was able to dial up and dial down the kind of feedback manually. So they were almost acting like a DJ for the crowd noise, but for deaf people, in a sense.
Yeah, and for the audience, when they had this haptic feedback, what were they wearing to experience that?
So it's like a necklace, like a pendant, and it hangs around your neck, sits on your chest, and it vibrates with various different sort of intensities and rhythms and patterns, a bit like the haptic feedback in your phone or in your smartwatches. And it was able to relay certain sounds and events from the sport to, you know, directly to the people. So when an athlete hit the mat in a throw, for example, you might get quite a dramatic kind of hard tap, whereas it might be a bit lighter and a bit more ripply for, you know, clapping and sounds like that. But it's just sort of really shows how much sound plays a role in sport that we almost take for granted. You know, for judo, the way this was being used, the matches are started and stopped quite often just by instructions from the referee. And of course, nobody in the crowd who's deaf is able to hear that. So that's translated into taps from the official, which are then translated into this haptic feedback. So everyone's able to follow along.
Yeah. So true. And so, I imagine if somebody throws somebody over their shoulder, it's clear what feedback the haptic has given you. And did people have to be told this amount of buzzes means this round is over or that kind of thing?
No, I think it was more just sort of done on feeling, really. And obviously we had the screens and the text and everything as well. So it was more just done on trying to pick it up as it went along. They didn't come with like an instruction card or anything, but I think the aim is more just to sort of give you a sense of the atmosphere and the environment that you're in, really.
Yeah. And did it take any getting used to, or did, you know, did one adjust to it pretty quickly?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a strange sensation at first, but once you kind of dial into it, you kind of understand it. I mean, I'm hearing, I'm not deaf, so I maybe took a little bit longer to adapt to it than someone who has no hearing might have done. But once you tune into it, it makes pretty good sense, I think.
Yeah. Now for the athletes, running, they as I understand it, they change it because it used to be lights, but they've changed that now.
Well, they're looking to change it. So we were filming with a former Deaflympic relay athlete who has invented a new kind of tech for sprinters to be able to use on the starting block. So obviously for deaf sport, there's no starting pistol. So they use, as you say, they use lights. But looking at lights from a sprinter's perspective is actually quite difficult, because obviously if you imagine when you're down in your starting position on the blocks, you're usually kind of looking straight down, waiting to hear the gun, and then you go. Whereas if you're looking for lights, you're having to kind of look up at a certain point, which breaks your form slightly, and it leaves you much more open to distraction, which obviously sprinters famously, you know, living on the hair trigger, don't want any kind of distraction. So what Akihira's invented is like a haptic kind of pad that sits under your wrist. And so when the starter presses the button, everyone's pad vibrates at exactly the same time, down to the millisecond, and they're able to go based on the haptic feedback rather than the lights, because the human eye actually reacts slower to light than it does to sound, which I know a lot of people might find surprising, but it's true.
Yeah, but no, it actually makes a kind of a sense. So did they use that at the last Deaflympics along with the lights?
No, so they were still using the lights in the main competition. This is still in prototype at the moment, but they're hoping to have it in place at future competitions.
Yeah, gosh, yeah. I suppose you'd have to really test it rigorously, because you seriously don't want that to go wrong, because if someone's been training
exactly,
for 4 years.
And the latency, you know, when you're talking sprinting, when you're talking, you know, fractions of a second, the latency becomes really important. So the person in lane one, theirs has to vibrate at exactly the same time as the person in lane eight.
Yeah. Now, there was also smart glasses that people could use. What were they used for?
Yeah, so that was at the swimming. We were testing two different types were actually being tested and demoed at the event. And they both did slightly different things, but similar kind of technology. So you wore the glasses and they had displays on the inside of the glasses. It's all very futuristic. And one was doing kind of live translated race commentary. So you could watch or read commentary of the race that was happening, because the commentary that was happening in the arena was obviously in Japanese, and my Japanese is extremely limited. So it was very helpful to be able to read commentary of the races in English. But the other ones also displayed things like display screens, so you could see who was in which lane, what their times were, what the records were, all that kind of thing that might be things that perhaps deaf people may miss in announcements and commentary that's happening kind of in the arena that they wouldn't be aware of.
Yeah. That's extraordinary, really. That's probably more information than you'd get
yeah,
if you were just listening to an audio commentary.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, you know, it's something that you'd be able to watch on, you know, to look up on your phone or whatever. But obviously, if you're looking at your phone, you're not looking at what's happening in front of you. So this sort of enables you to have the best of both worlds in that sense, really.
And within Tokyo, in general, had they put in any of this technology to assist people who were visiting the games?
Yeah, absolutely. Because Tokyo is famously a difficult city to navigate, and that can be even more difficult if you have any sort of disability or impairment. So we did a little bit of a tour with a Finnish orienteerer, because orienteering is a Deaflympic sport, a sport unique to the Deaflympics. And we decided that it would be, you know, good to take an orienteerer around to see if she got lost. And we were able to test this technology that they're deployed in certain major subway stations in Tokyo, where someone could go in, someone who couldn't hear, and could type their question about where they needed to go, and it would come up on a glass, like transparent screen. It would translate into Japanese, and then the member of staff was able to speak into a microphone in Japanese, and the screen would translate it back into the written language on the screen, so the person was able to get directions.
God, that's amazing, isn't it? Do they have to, do they have table tennis in the Deaflympics?
Table tennis is in the Deaflympics. Yeah,
yeah.
They have a few. Most of the sports are the same ones that you'd expect from the Olympics and Paralympics, but there are one or two that are unique to the Deaflympics as well.
No, and the only reason I ask you is that a listener has texted in to say sound is very important in table tennis to judge the spin on the ball, especially on the service. So I don't know how they.
Well, there you go. I don't profess to be a table tennis expert, but that obviously shows you why the onomatopoeia was so important in table tennis.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul, that was fascinating. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Paul Carter there, a broadcaster and presenter of BBC Techsplore. And as you heard there, he was at the Deaflympics in Tokyo in November just gone.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.